chromosomes. Little strands of nucleic acids and proteins are the fundamental genetic instructions that tell us who we are at birth. Most people are born with 46 chromosomes, but each year in the United States, about 6,000 people are born with an extra chromosome, making them a person with Down syndrome. If you've ever encountered someone with Down syndrome, you know that they are some of the kindest, most joyful people you will ever meet. They truly have something extra. My name is Lisa Nichols, and I have spent the last 24 years as both the CEO of Technology Partners and as the mother to Allie. Allie has something extra in every sense of the word. I have been blessed to be by her side as she impacts everyone she meets. Through these two important roles as CEO and mother to Allie, I have witnessed countless life lessons that have fundamentally changed the way I look at the world. While you may not have an extra chromosome, every leader has something extra that defines who you are. Join me as I explore the something extra in leaders from all walks of life and discover how that difference in each of them has made a difference in their companies, their families, their communities, and in themselves. I'm excited to have Brian Cook on the show today. Brian is the CEO of Pete's Living Greens, a leading produce company that specializes in hydroponic greenhouse-grown lettuce and cress under the Pete's and Humble Roots brands. If you like this episode today, please go to Apple Podcasts or wherever you listen and leave us a 5-star rating. Well, hi, Brian. I am so glad that we were able to make this work today. You know what's so amazing about technology is you are in California and I'm in St. Louis. But aren't we so grateful for all this wonderful technology that can connect us via video and audio?
Yeah, it's great to be here. Thank you for having me. And you know, it's even better not to be able to just have a conversation over the phone, but be able to see someone's face. So thanks again.
Absolutely. You know, I've got a good friend, Orv Kimbrough, that just talks about how important relationships are. And you just never know what's going to happen on the other side of a relationship. But you and I got connected through the Christian Fellowship Network within YPO. So we're both YPOers and we're both in the Christian Fellowship Network, and I've gotten to know you, and that's how we're connected. And I'm just so grateful that you made the time to be on the show. So let's get started. I want to hear a little bit about how you grew up, Brian.
Yeah, I've actually had a very interesting first 18 years in life. I grew up in a small town called Duarte. We say it's the small town among big cities. It's in the San Gabriel Valley, but it's really towny in the way it feels. You know, I had teachers when I went to high school that my aunts and parents had, and then my kids actually had teachers that I had. And so, and then, you know, it's like one of those areas where, you know, you felt comfortable where your kids were down the street because you knew that you had other parents keeping an eye out for them. So even though we were in the kind of the big city areas, you know, it was definitely a small town feel. You know, I'm actually half Mexican, half Anglo, but my parents actually separated when I was 4. I don't really remember them much ever together, really. However, they were always really great co-parenting. So I was extremely blessed to be in a family where the mother was still there, the father was still there. And while they were not together, they made it work for the kids. You know, that was kind of our life just in Duarte, you know, going to school there. I went to all the schools through junior high. Took 1 year away from there to go into high school at a called Damien High School. It was like an all-boys school in San Dimas, but then finished off at Duarte High School. And the sad truth of the ability to go to that private school was that I lost my mother to cancer at 13. So that was a big turning point in my life. It was like one of those areas where, you know, you have two ways to go, where you get stronger and you're better for it, or the route I took, which is downward spiral of craziness. So, you know, during 13 to 16, you know, I was in a lot of different areas. Duarte is a great place to live, very family oriented, but it does have a gang element to it. And I really kind of went that route in a lot of ways, not ever joining or anything like that, but it was people who were, you know, there for me during this hard time with losing my mother. And then, you know, Not any fault to my father, but, you know, I had some animosity towards him during the whole thing. And so there was times where I spent living on the streets and at a friend's house. And ultimately left home and was living with a friend's house for a good amount of time. The Jagerian family, Vic, and he was just an amazing angel that was sent my way to kind of get me through it. But we talked about hitting rock bottom, and my first rock bottom was, you know, getting into trouble with the law. And that really kind of, one, it scared me, but two, it kind of moved me back into, you know, life with the parents. But the most important thing that happened to me during that time, and I'm not saying that anybody should be doing this, but my ex-wife got pregnant with my son, Sage, and he was the turning point in my life. You know, once Sage came to be, I had something more to live for. So, you know, that was kind of the turn. After that, you know, it was all about working two jobs, three jobs, doing whatever it is to make it happen. And, you know, I had some health issues over the years, so I never completed college, and that's a whole story of it on. But, you know, through the next few years, you know, I basically ended up having three kids and then blessed to have a fourth through a second marriage later on in my 30s. But, you know, it was just kind of an interesting life. You know, through that time, I actually struggled, you know, in multiple ways, but happy that, you know, I just kept trucking on, and the good Lord saw it fit to keep putting angels in my life to make sure that I was able to take that next step.
Right. I had read somewhere where you said there have been so many angels sent to rescue you from different pieces. So I didn't know that, but it sounds like there were people that surrounded you during the loss of your mom. And at any age in life, it is difficult to lose that parental figure, but especially during those formative years, you know, those teenage years, that is got to be just so hard. But thank you for sharing your story. I am so glad that you at some point decided to turn your life around and get back on the path. And, you know, we'll talk about this, but you've had tremendous success. You kind of started your career in sales. And I know you kind of, I think, started in the plastics world. Is that right?
Yeah, actually, it was interesting. So I didn't necessarily start in sales. I actually worked for a company called Jet Plastics. And I initially was on a line worker. So it was a plastic extrusions. And as it came off the line, I was the guy who, you know, cut it, sized it, make sure it was right. And I did that when I attempted to go to college at Cal State LA. And through there, I was given opportunities along the way to, you know, kind of build up. So from there, they put me into quality control and then into customer service and then sales. And one of my customers that I dealt with was actually a printing company that sold like a full package, both printing and these extrusions that we were doing to the grocery market. So I went over there and spent some time. And that's really when I got into the produce industry. And so that was around 21 years old when that happened. So I started working at this place called Plastic Specialties doing signage. So we did like all the signage back in the day for Whole Foods or shelf strips for companies like Ready Pack and Fresh Express. And through that, I got into an association called the Fresh Produce and Floral Council. That was really another turning moment in my career because I got to meet a lot of wonderful people, a lot of mentors, Dick Spisano, Rick Cruz, and countless others that were there for me. Kent Kawada was always there to kind of guide me and give me direction on the right path for work. You know, and these are guys who I called as I moved into different phases of my career that just said, hey, you know, here's what I'm doing. Is this the right spot for me? And I think that whole mentor piece of it is so important for folks to reach out and find one because they're just so valuable to make sure that you don't take the wrong step. So I was lucky to have them. And through that, met a lot of people and one gentleman, Wes Leifer was starting a new company. So I went and worked for him. He was a distributor where we were selling potatoes and onions and melons. And through that is when I took my next step with San Miguel Produce, which is where I spent a large part of my career to date before Hollandia here. And from there, I started off just in sales and organic sales, finished off there as their director of sales and marketing before moving to my current company, which is Hollandia Produce. We go by Pete's as the brand name to make sure you're eating your butter lettuce.
Right.
And always a shameless plug in there. Yeah, I start off here as our vice president of sales and marketing. And around November of 17 was given the opportunity as an interim president role and have continued on today as the CEO.
You have had just an amazing career. So I'm going to go back to San Miguel. Some of your accomplishments, you grew their organic program from infancy to 30% of the total business. You also finished the last 2 years with 120 13% of year-over-year growth, respectively. You grew their revenue. You did a lot when you were there. And then, you know, you moved over to Hollandia Produce, which, of course, is known by a different name now. Brian, when I met you, I said, oh, my goodness, you're the butter lettuce people. You guys are the leader in hydroponically grown living greens. And we'll talk about living greens a little bit more. But let's back up, because I want you to tell our listeners a little bit about the history, if you would.
Yeah, definitely. So as you might be able to gather from the name, Hollandia in Holland. So the company was actually started by a husband and wife that came over from Holland. That was Art and Magda Overgaag. And they actually started in plants. So it was originally called Hollandia Flowers, multiple types of plants throughout that time period. They had four children. Each of them worked in the business in various ways. And then ultimately get into a spot where their youngest son, Pete Overgaag, took the company over. And he took it through a few transitions. So, you know, in flowers, there was a lot of pressure with flowers coming in from other countries. And so the import factor was starting to weigh on their ability to be profitable. And so this company was built on pivots. And so they moved into cucumbers and tomatoes. And, you know, it's funny because when I first got here, I used to go to the produce market and folks would be like, oh, I don't know why you guys stopped doing cucumbers. You guys had the best cucumbers. So, you know, even quality was really big in the family's repertoire from the very beginning. And so, you know, that happened. And again, you know, it got to a point in time where doing cucumbers and tomatoes with the assets that we had were just going to be tough to remain competitive. And so seeing this, Pete took us into the living butter lettuce. And so that has kind of been our bread and butter, if you will, for quite some time now. So, you know, that's kind of one of the most interesting things that, you know, a lot of folks don't know is that, you know, the lettuce, a lot of people think traditional farming grown out in land, but you know, there's a growing aspect of it where it's being done indoors. This was our initial, and we were the first in the West Coast to do the hydroponic living butter lettuce. And then we were able to do it organically, using all organic inputs and making sure, you know, we were following all the organic standards, but still being able to do it in a way that protected the product from the environment. So, you know, we're happy to help pave the way for a lot of other folks who've come into the space and are successful in doing it as well. And our next venture is into packaged salad. So love to get into a little bit more of that.
Absolutely. Well, I do want to talk about that. I do know this lettuce, and there is a difference. The crispness, the freshness of it. What do you mean, Brian, by living greens?
So where we grow, we instead of it being in soil and disturbing the soil, we use a product called peat moss. And what the peat moss does is it gives a foundation for the roots to grow into. And so because of that, we're able to package it with still the roots attached to it. So it's still living. And, you know, as it's moving through the process and to store, it's still gaining some of the nutrients from that peat base. So what does that do for you? It allows for a much longer shelf life. You know, we put 18 days on our product, but frankly, if you put it in the proper cold storage, I can sure it could last 30 plus days. I've seen it happen on accident.
That's funny. Well, you know what I love about it? Because the root ball is still there. It's like you are harvesting your lettuce from anywhere. It's like you're harvesting the lettuce. I love the whole concept. But we do need to take a quick break, and we'll be right back with Brian Cook.
Are you an IT executive with years of experience? Are you energized when you empower others? If I've piqued your interest thus far, you may be a great mentor for the TechLX program in St. Louis. TechLX prepares rising IT leaders to tackle today's challenges and prepare for tomorrow's demanding roles by pairing them with senior IT executives like yourself. Mentors receive coaching from technology partners and will be invited to all TechLX networking events featuring outstanding speakers of the IT industry. To apply, visit tpi.co/TLX.
So Brian, you came in 2016 and you became the president in 2018. And I know we've already mentioned you and I are in the Christian Fellowship Network. And so I know that faith has played a major role in your personal life as well as your professional life. you moved up very quickly. How did faith play? Did faith play a role in that at all?
It did. I've always had been a follower and understood Jesus, but only kind of like at this very high, you know, level. And it wasn't until when I was 30 that I really kind of joined a church and got into a faith. But when I was reading the Bible, there was a couple words that really just jumped at me off the page, and it was love and light. That's kind of really has been the foundation. So, you know, to have an environment of growth at a company, I strongly feel that you have to be able to, you know, give them that love, give them an area where they could build off of it and build their strengths. And it's been very important to me. And it's, frankly, it was driven by what I had learned from my readings in the Bible.
Well, that brings me to another point. I know a little bit about your morning routine, and I'm always curious, what is your morning routine? You know, I told you my good friend Jeff Henderson that wrote the book Four says you win the day, win the morning. But if you really want to even win the morning, start the night before. But I mean, his thing is you got to win the morning to win the day. And so I know this about you. You get started at 4:30 in the morning. Tell me a little bit about your morning routine. How do you get grounded and centered to take on whatever the day throws your way?
I'm a creature of habit. So I'll start with the night before, since of your quote. But I do put out all my workout clothes the night before, get everything ready to leave promptly in the morning. I'm up at 4:30, do the normal morning routine of brushing your teeth and getting ready. And then I get out just up the street from me is an Anytime Fitness where, you know, I work out and get ready for work. I'm generally at work around 6:15. I feel strongly that, you know, if you could get three of the most important things you need to get accomplished day in the first few hours, you know, the rest of the day tends to be very successful because you're, you know, you've set yourself in that success really early on. And so, you know, I generally have two or three items that I want to get done in the morning. But before I get that, I want to make sure I set myself mentally. As soon as I get into work, I read a few passages of the Bible, you know, do a quick little prayer for the day. And then I get on those few tasks. And by the time, you know, the team gets in, you know, I'm ready to work with them and be of service to them in any way that they need.
You know, I was talking to another friend earlier this week, and he said, here's the thing with the leader. You've got to do that because when you are the leader, people are coming to you to help them solve whatever it is their issues are. You have your own issues. So you're taking on their issues too. And I mean, it's a lot. So I know culture is very, very important. What have you done since you've been there to continue to strengthen and foster? Because I know that there's a very strong culture there, but I know that you have continued to foster that, you know, since being in this role. What have you done?
You first got to go back and kind of think through kind of your whole life and, you know, wasn't born and you put in a leading position. So along the ways, you have a lot of managers and bosses, and if you keep track of what worked for you and what didn't, you know, you start seeing a foundation of what people want. People want to be heard. People want to, you know, feel like they're of value. They want to feel like they're trusted. That really set with me. And so when I was given this opportunity, you know, the first thing we did was we met with the executive team and said, hey, the social aspect of our company is extremely important to me. So how are we going to build this where it's a spot that people could excel? You know, that's where we started, was just kind of a brainstorm session with the team and understanding that positivity, that love and light that I spoke to earlier, that had to be where you led from. We came up with areas that were going to be important to us. No bullying, being supportive, all of our values that, you know, were created were based upon what was going to provide that positive environment. And then, you know, you can't just talk about it. You got to live it at your level and make sure that, you know, your team's heard was another big one. Twice a year, we get together with our full team and just say, okay, we need a full list of things that we're, you know, where we need to improve on. And it goes everything from what's personal to them to what's business. So it could be anything from those speakers are no good and music makes me more efficient, and efficient is a value. And so I want new speakers. But right. Again, it doesn't stop there. You really have to take it all the way to the end and report back and say, hey, here are the 50 items that we had. Here's what we've done on them. can really kind of close that loop, or it's just all talk.
Words. Yeah, they had to be backed up by action. Brian, in your world, how important is the packaging? And then I want you to talk a little bit about improving the recycling process, if you would.
We always look at things holistically. So when you look at packaging, there are three big areas that we look at. We look at food safety, we look at food waste, and then we look at plastic reduction. You know, it's a very important piece in the full environmental aspect of it. And we could also have a huge conversation about, you know, that and its effects on climate change and what have you. But while we know that plastic isn't perfect, we also know that it plays an integral role in those other two areas, food safety. You know, you could see it from consumers today when the COVID issue started, how many people went to packaged products because of its food safety aspect of it. Do we want to always stay there? No, we don't want all that plastic out there, but it provides a purpose. And then food waste, we are talking about the root ball and how it extends life. Well, so does the packaging. So the packaging helps keep it moist. And, you know, that's where you can get the multiple days of it. So do you want an area where you're throwing 40% of the food away? I mean, just think of the implications that that has. And so packaging plays an important role to extend that shelf life. You know, again, we set ourselves that plastic isn't perfect, but it's going to have its place to play. What we did as part of our launch from Greenhouse Fresh, which is our new packaged salad program, is we worked with an association called 1% for the Planet. And through them, we started working with a group called the Recycling Partnership. And so what it basically boils down to is if I could get back the plastic clamshell that we're selling to you and that you're bringing home, we'd love to get it back, recycle it, and use less virgin plastic. That would be awesome. But our current recycling system is broken, you know, and there's a lot of work that needs to be done, a lot of improvements that need to be made. And the folks at the Recycling Partnership are really doing great work on a bunch of aspects of it, you know, putting the great minds together who could solve this problem, policy to make sure that, you know, the environmental piece of it is being discussed.
I love that. So 1% of the sales of your newest line is going toward that effort. And, you know, I mean, you're putting your money where your mouth is there, Brian, and I really do appreciate that. So tell me about the new line. I mean, when did that come on the scene?
So we started it a few months ago. It's currently available in California market, very much so in Southern California through Albertsons, Vons, Pavilions, Bristol Farms, few others. So it's kind of our first step into it. But what we wanted to do is we wanted to provide the consumer an opportunity to vote with their dollars on an item that's built on a more sustainable effort. If you think about our living butter lettuce, it's a current clamshell. What we did in this particular line is that we removed that top clamshell and removed it with a film. What happened with that is that reduced the plastic usage by about 40%, which reduces the CO2 that's put into it for making those. So that's one effort into it. And then there's the overall sustainability piece of controlled environment growing. So we're, you know, using the sun as our number one tool. So we're not having to depend on lights to grow this. So that's the difference between greenhouse growing and vertical farming. But you had talked a little bit about the percentages. The most recent surveys that were out was it's 90% less water and land. And again, it's a little bit more expensive than your conventional traditional farming. But what we've done is we sat back as there's been a lot of technological advances in the way we're growing and are now able to do it at a price point that's getting a lot closer to what that would have been. And so now it gives the consumers the ability to say, hey, the environmental, social aspects of this is extremely important to me. And this company is doing it. And we want to, you know, make sure that we're checking all the important boxes off that, you know, folks are looking for in that way.
I have to ask you this question and then we'll get into something extra. I had read where a young woman had taken a tour and she said she was amazed at the amount of automation at the facility. And she said there was such limited human contact, you know, with the product. So tell me about technology and how is it changing the face of agriculture today? And especially in your case.
Yeah. I mean, technology for us is at the core of what we do. So, you know, having the most advanced technologies to make sure that the product is growing well, moving well, harvested well, you want to reduce touch points as much as possible to limit any issues with, you know, pathogens and that. And so we're always looking to automate for that reason. To her point, yeah, it's pretty cool. You know, I mean, we have, if you go to our website, you see, you know, Robina planting the lettuces in the channels, and then the channels move. And, you know, basically it's untouched for most of the growing cycle. And where we do touch it is in the areas where we feel it's important to the consumer. So, you know, the quality side of it is an extremely important piece. No one wants to get a packaged salad where, you know, no hands were ever touched on it. So you have yellow leaves in there, you know, I mean, it's the right. nature of farming. So you have to plan for that. And so, you know, we don't say that we're, you know, hands-free by any stretch of the imagination, but it's pretty as automated as you can get and maintain a high quality product in packages.
Well, I bet you if anyone would come to Carpentania, California, I bet you would give them a tour, wouldn't you, Brian?
Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah. No, we're very proud of what we do here. So we do have people come by now and again, and happy to give them a tour. We're very proud of what we do.
Well, I have to ask you, this is something extra. What is the something extra, Brian, that you believe every leader needs?
There needs to be a base of authenticity to it, because it's what drives trust. You can't do anything successful by yourself, I don't think, or anything worth doing. So, you know, you need a great team around you, and they have to be able to trust you. And I think that comes with authenticity. You know, I don't think there's never any one thing. And so, you know, another one that's really strong, in my opinion, is resiliency. I mean, when you're a leader, look, I mean, just look at what happened with COVID. I mean, there are things that are going to knock you in the teeth. And so you got to be, you know, resilient. You got to be willing to do the hard work. You know, I've got a few different sayings that are posted in various locations. And I heard you mention a couple of them. I'm very big in those too. A few of them that kind of drive this is the Ronald Reagan, it can be done. That's a very firm in what we do here. And any leader needs to have that mindset of it can be done. It's the how, not if. The hard work piece of it, you know, I think Stephen Hogan said it best when he said, you can't have a $1 million dream with a minimum wage work ethic.
So true. It is so true. I was talking to a young entrepreneur a couple of weeks ago. I said, you know, I don't know any successful entrepreneur that wasn't about hustle. So if you're thinking you're going to be working banker's hours, this is probably not the thing for you, you know, because I said, it's hustle. It's hard work and the work ethic. So I love that. That's a great piece of advice. So Brian, is there anything that you want to talk about that our listeners might be interested in and can get involved in?
Yeah, no, I mean, we're definitely going to be building up the troops there in Georgia here. It's in the building stages. So we're still some months away for that, but we'll definitely need good people to fill those roles. I think our brand purpose really drives what our company stands for. And it's all we do for the greater good of people, of planet, and our dreams. And I think that's really, you know, kind of the takeaway, you know, I'd love for folks to understand is that that is who we stand for as a company. And, you know, you have our commitment to live that out every day of our lives. And there are areas where you could help contribute in each of those areas of, you know, being good to people and being good to planet. Maybe to not to growing greens is part, maybe that's a little bit more niche group of us, but, you know, definitely the people planet role, we all have work that we could do in that area. And, you know, I always end a lot of my talks with the team here with the statement, be a light to others. And, you know, that's kind of the takeaway I would love for the listeners to kind of let it sit with them.
I love it. Well, you know what I'm just reminded of? You said the sun is your greatest tool in what you do, you know, and we do, we need to be a light. So, wow, there's something there. I think I see a book in the making there, Brian. I'll help you with the title. All right. Well, my friend, thank you so much for joining me today. This has been so much fun for me, and I know that your story is going to help our listeners. So thank you for being on the Something Extra podcast.
Yeah, thank you for the opportunity. Be well, Lisa.
Thank you for listening to today's show. Something Extra with Lisa Nichols is a Technology Partners production. Copyright Technology Partners, Inc., 2019. For show notes or to reach Lisa, visit tpi.co/podcast. Don't forget to leave a review on Apple Podcasts, Google Play, or wherever you listen.